Shall we pray? And now may the words of my mouth and the thoughts and meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I don't know if you've noticed, but these last 10 or so years have seen the rise of a movement, a popular movement, and it's been labeled the New Atheism. The New Atheism is not just people who are atheists. It's not just people who don't believe in God. It's a group of people who are intent on destroying faith in God. That's their avowed aim. They want to stop people believing in God because they think that believing in God is not a good thing. And so they've been labeled the New Atheists. One of their better-known champions has been someone called Richard Dawkins. He's been around for quite a while, but he became particularly, he got a particularly high profile when he published a book back in 2006 called The God Delusion. I brought it along today. Here we go, The God Delusion. It's quite a heavy wee book. And this seemed to hit the spot for a huge number of people. He suddenly became very, very popular, and the book was being quoted all over the place and was very well received. Here's some of the comments on the back cover. Now, I know that publicists put the people who like the book's comments on the back cover, so you've got to take that into account. But nevertheless, at last, Richard Dawkins, one of the best non-fiction writers alive today, has assembled his thoughts on religion into a characteristically elegant book. Steven Pinker. Oh, it's so refreshing, after being told all your life that it is virtuous to be full of faith, to read such a resounding trumpet blast for truth instead. It feels like coming up for air, by someone called Matt Ridley. And Philip Pullman, the children's writer. The God Delusion is written with all the clarity and elegance of which Dawkins is a master. It is so well written, in fact, that children deserve to read it as well as adults. It should have a place in every school library, especially in the library of every faith school. So there we go, The God Delusion. But there are other folks who are part of the new atheist movement, if you like. Richard Dawkins is only one of them. But I'm focusing on him today because he seems to be the best known of everybody. New atheism, if you like, has got three major objections to faith in God. Three major objections to religious belief. The first is that there is no God, so what's the point of believing in him? So that's one of their major objections. Science has disproved the need for us to believe in God. The second one is that belief in God is unreasonable. It's a sign of childishness, of childlike immaturity, if you like. No right-thinking person could possibly hold to such beliefs. So that's their second big objection. The third one, belief in God is actually bad for us. It leads to violence and oppression. It's like a poison in society. It needs to be rooted out and destroyed. It's like a virus that we need to be inoculated against. It's bad for us. So, as you can see, these are quite big issues. And there's been masses written about them. This is not the sort of thing that I can deal with on a Sunday morning. If you want to really go into greater depth, there's lots of books, there's lots of articles, there's lots of web pages dedicated to answering or looking at these objections and criticisms. So all I'm going to do is share some of my own thoughts on these matters. And I'd also be interested in your thoughts too. And I'll say a wee bit more about that later on this morning, but I'd also be interested in your thoughts too. I've given a rough outline of what I'm going to say on these sermon notes that you were given as you came in. But I mean, basically, I'm going to touch on these objections in turn. That's going to be the bulk of what I'm saying. And then I'll make some brief comments on Richard Dawkins' own approach, his method. And then finally, I'll try and answer the question, what would Jesus say to Richard Dawkins? My son pointed out to me that what Jesus would say to Richard Dawkins would be, ha, 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 you're wrong. But I'm not sure if, I'm not sure if that would be all that constructive. So we'll just move quickly on from that. Let's begin with these three major criticisms. And I'm drawing my answers from this book by Alistair McGraw called Why God Won't Go Away, Engaging with the New Atheism. Okay, so that's mention of that's also made on the sermon notes if you're wondering why that's there. It's not quite as big as Richard Dawkins' book, and it's fairly straightforward and simple to read. Anyway, the first, I'm doing them in reverse order, this belief that God is bad, that religion is a problem, that it's, that quote, new atheists, it's the root of all evil. Religion is the root of all evil. They're very good at sound bites, the new atheists. That somehow religion inevitably leads to fanaticism, it inevitably leads to violence. You know, a lot of the stuff the new atheists propagate is highly simplistic. And here's a good example of this. But nevertheless, we have to acknowledge that it has a resonance in popular culture, that they're catching on to things that are already there. That, I mean, how often have you heard someone say something like, oh, religion is bad, it just causes division? Look at the Crusades, look at 9/11, look at Northern Ireland. So there is something there that we have to engage with. There is a very real issue that we have to engage with if we're going to believe in God. So how do we respond, or how would I respond? Well, I would ask myself a simple question. Is that actually true? Is it actually true? Pakistan gets a bad press these days, doesn't it? And it gets a bad press because of Islamic fundamentalism. And yet, I've lived a huge part of my life in Pakistan. And so I know for a fact that compared to all the good, kind, gracious, faithful Muslims who live there, the Islamic fundamentalists are just drops in the ocean. I know that for a fact. Not all Muslims are Islamic fundamentalists, nor ever will be. If you look at 9/11, if you actually look at 9/11, at what was going on there, what caused these people to hijack these planes and do these horrific things, you'll find that their motives were not primarily religious. They were more political motives. They belonged to a group of people called Islamists, and they were trying to perpetuate Islamism. And Islamism is a political thing. They're a group of people who want to achieve a political aim. They will do anything to bring that about, even if what they do goes against Islam. Hear what I'm saying? If you lived through the 60s, hand it up if you lived through the 60s and 70s. Go on, be brave. Yeah, quite a few. Okay. You might remember a similar movement. They committed a string of atrocities all the way across Europe. Bomb blasts, shootings. But what motivated them was not a religious ideology, it was a secular ideology. Have you ever, you remember the Bader-Meinhof gang? What they did was not in the name of religion, it was in the name of communism. And yes, history is littered with the violence and suffering caused by people who've hijacked religion, like Christianity, to suit their own political ends. I'm not denying that. It's a sad truth. But the suffering they have caused pales into insignificance compared to the suffering caused by people who have turned their back on God. Think of the French Revolution. Think of the 20th century. Think of Nazism. Think of Stalinism. Think of the Khmer Rouge. Everyone's a secular, godless ideology. And I'd say the problem here is not belief in God, it's the presence of something else that we all suffer from, but it's something that the new atheists are bound to deny exists, which is the presence of evil. The presence of evil. So there's my thoughts on the first one, that religion is bad. The second one, Belief in God is unreasonable. It's mindless superstition. No mature, intelligent, right-thinking person could possibly believe in God. And by belief in God here, Richard Dawkins means, he means belief in a personal God. Someone who can be known, someone who was involved in creation, someone who was involved in the world. And once again, I think the new atheists here are guilty of oversimplifying things. Because just because the existence of such a God cannot be scientifically proven, that doesn't mean it's unreasonable to believe that he exists. Long before Richard Dawkins gained the celebrity status he has now, there was a philosopher called Isaiah Berlin, and he was very good at thinking about knowledge, you know, human knowledge, and he grouped what we believe to be true into three groups. Okay, now listen very carefully, and I will test you on this afterwards. First of all, there's the things that we can observe, okay? Like, you heat water and it boils. You actually see it happening. You see the flame, you see the water getting hot, and you see it boiling, okay? So we know it's true. You heat water and it boils. It's observable. That's one group, okay? Then you've got another group. These are the things that can't be directly observed, but can be established by deduction. You know, like Newton sees the apple up there, and then he sees the apple down there. He can't see what's caused it there to come. There's a big gap, so he deduces that something's caused it, but he can't actually see it. So he comes up with this theory that there exists something called gravity. Now, gravity is a deducted truth. You know, there's a gap in there, you can't see it, but you see that and you see that, so in order to fill the gap, you deduce that there's something that's caused it, and you call it gravity. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that we believe to be true that we don't actually observe. It's deduced. You with me so far? No one falling asleep? Good. And then there's a third bunch of stuff that we believe passionately to be true, but cannot be seen and cannot be deduced. Okay? That all human beings are born equal. That all human beings are born free. That oppression is a bad thing. That justice is a good thing. Now, you see, these are the things that the new atheists also believe in. But they can't prove it. They can't prove that they're true. Neither can we. We can't prove them. In fact, evolutionary theory would sort of go against them. But we still hold them to be true. The new atheists can't prove these things, nor can they prove or disprove what I believe, which is that the reason we think these things are right is because we are made in the image of a God who is good and just. And being human beings, we all share in his likeness. We all share in his likeness. But the main point I'm trying to make here, when it comes to this charge that belief in God is unreasonable, is that just because you can't prove or disprove something scientifically doesn't make it an unreasonable thing to believe. That's all I'm saying. And the third objection, because it sort of leads on to it, belief in God is unscientific. I've watched Richard Dawkins on television. I've heard him on the radio. And for him, it seems to always come back to the need for evidence, for scientifically verifiable evidence. He refuses to believe in anything unless there is scientifically verifiable evidence for it. Show me the evidence, he says. Show me the evidence. It's like a mantra. Show me the evidence. And once again, I think he's being guilty of a wee bit of oversimplification here. A wee bit of lack of depth. Listen to what Alistair McGrath says about him. What he says about this whole question, belief in God is scientific. There are certainly some things that science can prove and has proved. That the chemical formula for water is H2O, for example, or that the average distance of the moon from the Earth is about 384,500 kilometers. Did you know that? Okay, well, you do now. But these are basically facts about the world. No one's denying these things. Everybody just takes them as fact. They're given. The big scientific questions concern notions about the origins of the universe, the nature of force and matter, and perhaps the biggest question of all, is there a grand unifying theory that can explain everything? We can only give to these questions good answers that we believe can be justified from the best evidence at our disposal. Notice that we believe can be justified from the best evidence at our disposal. Standard scientific textbooks rightly emphasize that science depends on faith. It depends on you having faith that certain things are true, and then you use those as building blocks to construct your theories. Scientists base a huge amount of what they do upon things that they hold to be true, but cannot be scientifically verified to be true. And even scientists can get things wrong. Did you know that 100 years ago, every respectable scientist believed that the universe was eternal, that it had no beginning? Any thought that the universe had a beginning was dismissed as being immature, childish, religious, superstitious. Don't be silly. Every right-thinking person knows that the universe cannot have a beginning because it's eternal. Can you imagine what they thought when someone started saying, you know, I've got this theory about the origins of the universe and it's called the Big Bang. People thought this was religious nonsense. True. They thought, I can't believe it. No. Of course, they don't think that now. They don't think that now. And yet, this theory that it all began with a Big Bang creates its own problems for the new atheists. Because if something began, then why? And what caused it? These are not problems that science can answer. These are more philosophical questions, more religious questions. And point to one of the many, many reasons why I believe in God. And I think it's reasonable to believe in God. Listen to this three-line logic. You know three-line logic. You start with one truth, then you add in another truth, and you combine the two to come to a conclusion. Okay, listen to these three lines of logic from William Craig. Whatever begins to exist must have a cause. Does that make sense? Yeah, you're still awake? You're nodding? Whatever begins to exist must have a cause. It didn't just happen. It has to be begun by something. Okay, so that's the first line of logic. Second line of logic, you're already ahead of me. The Big Bang Theory suggests that the universe had a beginning. Okay? Whatever begins to exist must have a cause. Big Bang suggests that the universe must have a beginning. Combine the two, the universe must have a cause. There must be a reason for it. There must be an answer to the question, why? And I would believe, I'd go as far as to say, it might have a creator. So I'm not going to say much more about it. I'm just going to leave that there for you to go away and ponder. But even the Big Bang Theory can be reasonably seen to point towards the belief that all this didn't just happen, that there was someone behind it. That's a reasonable thing to believe. So those are my thoughts on all three objections. Now my comments on Richard Dawkins and, it has to be said, all the new atheists' methods, because there's quite a few of them about. And just three things, okay? It's not going to be quite as long as the last bit. First, and this is something I pointed out throughout, is they have a tendency to oversimplify things. They're very good at soundbites. They're very good at grabbing onto popular ideas and using them to make their points. And the whole reason I've taken such a long time to go over those three objections is to try and show you that things are not quite as simple as they always tend to make out. They're not quite as simple. Second comment. I think this is a more critical one. Richard Dawkins' own methods are not very scientific, nor are they very reasonable. See, If you're going to be scientific and reasonable about things, you've got to look at all the evidence, haven't you? And then you've got to balance things out and look for something that explains things. But when it comes to the evidence, Richard Dawkins is really quite selective. He wants us to believe that believing in God is unreasonable, so he goes to extremists and interviews them and then takes what they say and claims that it represents everybody who believes in God. He doesn't talk to the more reasonable people who believe in God. He just talks to the extremists. That's not very scientific. He wants us to believe that religion is bad, that it's bad for us, that it is bad for the world. So he completely ignores the enormous good that people who believe in God have done and are doing in the world. He just completely ignores it. He blanks it. He just focuses on the bad things. That's not very scientific. He also ignores all the bad things that people who don't believe in God seem to do. Listen to what he has to say about the Soviet Union. This is what he has to say about, you know, the 70 or 80 years of communist rule in the Soviet Union. Hands up if you can remember that time. Quite a few of you can. Okay, it wasn't perfect, was it? It wasn't perfect, that would be putting it mildly. But he says there is not the smallest evidence that atheism systematically influences people to do bad things. If you were to ask me personally, I might be tempted to say he's a bit deluded there. But that's just a personal reflection. And finally, ignores the growing number of scientists who are taking an interest in religious and philosophical ideas. His way of dealing with them is quite straightforward. He just calls them traitors. So his own methods are not very reasonable, and they're not very scientific. And a final comment I feel I have to make is, I think he's a bully. I mean, I really do. I've spent a lot of time reading his books and listening to him on the television and the radio. I think he's a bully. He has to be right, so everybody else has to be wrong, and he's got this gift of eloquence and use of words, and he uses it to hammer people down. I've seen him talking to a bunch of young teenagers who were Christians, forcing them to defend what they believed in. It was part of a documentary he was making on how awful religious belief was. So he was doing the editing, remember? And his approach was quite straightforward. It wasn't very intellectual. It was just to poke fun at them. You don't believe that, do you? Oh, don't be ridiculous. You know, here was a professor of philosophy talking to some teenagers. I wasn't impressed at all. So what would Jesus say to Richard Dawkins? I think a good place to start, wouldn't it, would be the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount contains the Matthew's collection of the body of Jesus' main teachings. Okay, and it's very well known to folks. It's on page number 968 in the Pew Bibles, but I'm not going to be reading too much from it. I just, maybe it's an exercise for you all. Go away and read the Sermon on the Mount, and you can think through what your ideas of what Jesus might say to Richard Dawkins would be. But I think that to Richard Dawkins' claim that religion inevitably leads to violence, Jesus might simply to point him to his words in Matthew chapter 5, verse 38, you have heard it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And that is what Jesus did. And that is what he calls us to do. A fact that Richard Dawkins, again, seems to miss out in his theorizing about our faith. And yes, it doesn't mean that we don't get things badly wrong sometimes. Of course we get things badly wrong. But we get things badly wrong a lot less often than Richard Dawkins makes out. And what about his claim that belief in God is not reasonable? It's not based on a balanced, reasonable approach. Well, I think Jesus might point him out to what he says in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way as you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you, which is what I've been trying to do this morning. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? And to his bullying methods, I think Jesus might say, well, he might draw his attention not something to the Sermon on the Mount, but to something that he says in Matthew chapter 18. Whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. This is on page number 985. But if anyone causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it'd be better for him to have a large millstone hung round his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. The new atheist method is simply, when in doubt, shout louder. And be as rude as you like, because you're right. I don't think that's good enough. But I don't think we can stop here, because I think there are actually lessons here for us all. I think we should ask not so much what would Jesus say to Richard Dawkins, but in the light of new atheism, what would Jesus be saying to us? What would he be saying to us? I think there are several reasons why the new atheism has suddenly become so popular in the last 10 years. I think it is partly a reaction to 9/11, partly a reaction to religious fundamentalism, but I also think it's a reaction to the image of an authoritarian church. You know, the church that is always right, and the church that tells people what to do and what to believe. I think it's a reaction to that as well. And I think we need to take note of that. I think it's a wake-up call for us. It's a reminder that we're not perfect, that we don't have all the answers. Rather, and there's a lovely image in the New Testament where Paul describes us as having a treasure held in a jar of clay. We are the jars of clay. You know, we're not perfect, but we hold the treasure, which is Jesus. And we may not know all the answers, but we know someone who does. And he's the one who, in the same Sermon on the Mount, says, ask and you will receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened unto you. Our job is not to go around judging people and telling people what to do. Our judge is to be saying, listen, here's Jesus. You got any questions? Why don't you ask him? See what difference it makes in your life. In meeting Jesus, we believe you'll be encountering God. That's what we believe. And of course, there's much more to what I believe than simply this business about reason and science and Richard Dawkins. We don't want our faith to be hijacked by the new atheists. And that's why over the next few weeks we're exploring other much deeper issues. But I thought it'd be good to start here. And then we can base what we look at in the next weeks on that and take things from there. But here's a story to end with. And I think it's a brilliant story. It comes right at the end of Alistair McGrath's book. It's a story of someone who began as an atheist and then became a Christian. And Alistair McGrath, who also writes books and lectures in philosophy, met him at a book signing event. Okay, he came up and he asked him to sign one of his books for him. And he told him a bit about his life, and they got into conversation. Listen to this. He told me that he'd read... I asked him what had led him to study theology. He told me that he'd read Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, a year or so earlier. And he said it seemed so unfair and one-sided that he felt he needed to hear the other side. So he started going to church. And after a while, he found that he could not sustain his faith in the parody when confronted with the real thing. And so he converted to Christianity, joyfully and decisively. Without Dawkins, he told me, I would never have given God a second thought. Isn't that brilliant? You know, I believe that the day will come, and I believe this because Jesus says this, but I believe that the day will come when we will all meet with Jesus face to face, and we will all have a conversation with him, whether we like it or not. So when that happens to Richard Dawkins, what will Jesus say?